Ready? Good morning and welcome to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, July, what is it, 9th? I think 8th, okay, thanks. July 8th, and we are happy to have you all here. I have some announcements, and that is that hearing devices are available on the left side of the dais. Board chambers are T-coil compatible for hearing devices. Speaker slips are available at the back of the chamber, so if you would like to speak or make public comment during any of our presentations, please fill out a speaker slip. And now I ask everyone to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Okay. Madam Clerk, would you like to read the posted agenda changes, please?
Certainly. Addendum to item number 11, which is an introduction of an ordinance amending County Code Title 16 to expand hazard abatement. Staff is amending the subject line to include that this item is exempt from CEQA. Added consent item number 32, request to approve new contracts with Sierra Mental Wellness Group to extend mental health evaluation team services for a three-month transition period and to renew mobile crisis response team and behavioral health crisis dispatch center services in the amount not to exceed $3,130,593 to provide mental health crisis intervention services, and a request to approve a corresponding budget adjustment to increase $375,000 appropriation in professional services using hospital revenues within Fund Center 166 Behavioral Health by a 4/5 vote. Added item to consent number 33, request to approve two revenue agreements, one for Arroyo Grande and French Hospitals, and the second for Sierra Vista and Twin City Community Hospitals, in the amount not to exceed $375,000 to provide mental health evaluation team services, and to authorize the county administrative officer or designee to sign any amendments that do not increase the level of general fund support required by the health agency. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as notice was posted prior to the 72-hour notice requirement.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. So we have items 1 through 27 and added item 32 and 33 to our consent agenda. I'm going to open public comment on the consent agenda. And again, if you want to fill out one of these and give it to us, then you know you can make some public comment on any of those items. So we'll start with Mr. Patrick McGibney. On item 11, please, and we'll follow with Mr. Baxter Boynton.
Good morning, Patrick McGibney. Several years ago, I had a conversation via email with Zachary Nicholas. Or Nicholson, a battalion chief for the law and law enforcement officer for CAL FIRE San Luis Obispo. It had been a long, hot, dry summer with some rain the previous winter. Grasses were hip high, and I was concerned of another fire. We have a small 10-acre farm out on the Carrizo near the foothills of the Caliente Range. It's sacred lands with a long history of First Nation habitation. We are now its caretakers. It had been a bad fire season. We had had a fire the year before that had destroyed a neighbor's home a block away. Aerial bombers had stopped the spread, and local CAL FIRE had extinguished it. But I was concerned about another fire. The details of that fire aren't important at this time, but I will say it wasn't started by a lightning strike. As you may know, California Valley is very eclectic. My immediate neighbor had passed away years before, and his heirs lived down in LA and never cared for the property. It was now an extreme fire hazard and needed immediate abatement to prevent another fire. The whole Carrizo is considered a SRA, a state responsibility area, which is defined as the area in the state where a state of California has a primary financial responsibility for prevention and suppression of wildfires. Zach Nicholas told me CAL FIRE doesn't have the authority to enforce abatement. They can only send out notices and warnings and can only enter a property to suppress a fire. He said the county needs an abatement ordinance in order to enforce, and he recommended I speak with my supervisor. So I spoke with Supervisor Arnold several times, and nothing ever happened. Supervisor Moreno won't even meet with me to discuss this. It needs to get done. We've been very lucky with the Madeira fire, but if the winds had been different, the whole valley could be now one big ash pile. We saw what happened with the LA fires. It could happen here. The unincorporated lands and our rural neighbors need this abatement ordinance. CAL FIRE needs this abatement ordinance. Please get it on the agenda and pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Baxter, Boynton.
Followed by Gary Kirkland.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Board of Supervisors, Supervisor Gibson. My name is Baxter Boynton. I live at 6202 Toro Creek Road, Atascadero, and I'm here to request that item 21 on the consent agenda be pulled for review and discussion. The Toro Creek Bridge Replacement Project has been bureaucratically breeding unobserved at Public Works in a file labeled, "Don't worry, it's federal money." This is your last opportunity to closely review the proposed project. See if you want your name on the brass plaque. There are multiple critical items that should be questioned. I provided your offices with a detailed list of the unaddressed and unmitigated problems. How we got here? San Luis Obispo County needed to replace the aging bridge across Toro Creek, but did not want to afford it. The county decided to use federal funds, which required a bridge to meet federal standards. Those standards specify an urban, high-traffic bridge with minimum lane width, sidewalks, and other specifications. The result, a wrong bridge to nowhere. The county is planning to build a freeway-style bridge at the very end of a little-used county road. One person compared it to a cow path to the Taj Mahal. The county-maintained road ends just 50 feet past the road at a two-track dirt road. There are less than 30 residents and no development potential. The county will be responsible for the cost to maintain Toro Creek during and after construction. The initial mitigation negative declaration was incomplete. As the only access road to the construction site, Toro Creek Road must be considered as an integral portion of the whole project. The study did not include the environmental impacts to Toro Creek Road residents, the physical condition of Toro Creek Road, or the cost to the county to maintain the road. A few major concerns: the potential for physical damage to the already poorly maintained Toro Creek Road, construction during high fire season in a very high fire severity zone. There are no requirements for fire suppression or evacuation plan. Construction traffic could restrict residents' evacuation and first responders' access without a plan and coordination. The negative traffic impacts at Highway 41 and Toro Creek Road need to be inspected, and the high volume of construction, truck traffic, and associated noise needs to be addressed. So please, pull item 21. To close, I invite you to visit Toro Creek. And if you have not driven Toro Creek, I suggest that you're not prepared to vote on this today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kirkland, you're next.
Thank you. Gary Kirkland from Atascadero. I want to speak about items 1, 3, and 14 on the consent agenda. Number one is a contract for spending $235,835 or $255,835 to write a report, as I understand it, to change the report that was given about the community services district in San Simeon for the county to take over. According to the news report I heard, is that the reason we're doing this is because the original report wasn't written properly, and it was written by, I guess, somebody in the San Simeon Community District or the county. And my question is, why would we hire somebody at this expense? Doesn't the county have anybody who knows how to write reports correctly? And why do we have to go out and spend this kind of money to hire somebody to do it when we already have almost 3,000 employees in the county? Item number three is to approve the maintain the current Medicaid program with no changes. Right now, The federal deficit, federal government deficit, is approaching $36 trillion, if it hasn't already gone over this. The county, in my opinion, every county, should live within their means. If they want to support people who need medical care, let's spend the money here and not expect other people from other places to push the federal government into greater and greater debt. This is, to me, unconscionable. Item 14 is closer to home to me. The county was going to approve a two-year revenue contract with the Tulare County of Office Education for block grants for a Friday night live activities. I was a teacher in a high school, and we had Friday night live, and the purpose of it was for students who were too stupid to find something to do on Friday night without getting arrested. And so they started this Friday night live program. This is not within, in my opinion, the county's purview. The schools should offer, and parents should offer, Friday night activities. It shouldn't be a county responsibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And last public comment, Nick Drews, health agency director. Sorry, I didn't miss that. At you first.
Perfect. Thank you, Nick Drews, health agency director for the county. I would like to make a correction for the record on item number 33. The attachments to this item, the reimbursement agreement with Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, French Hospital, and the reimbursement agreement with Adventist Sierra Vista Hospital and Twin Cities Hospital have been replaced with signed agreements. These signed agreements include minor revisions from the posted drafts, removal of indemnification language, finalized payment, and termination language and signature blocks. All changes have been reviewed and approved by County Council, and updated and signed versions have been provided to the clerk. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any further public comment? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the board to see if there's any items the members would like to address or pull. Supervisor Moreno.
Yes, I'd like three for a separate vote, pull 5, 32, and 33 for...
Whoa. Okay. Separate vote on three. And pull...
5, 32, and 33 kind of go together.
32 and 33. You're going to comment on those. Okay.
Correct.
Go ahead. Supervisor Pichon.
Three separate vote and just a comment on 14.
Okay. Very good. Supervisor Paulding.
Thank you. Just a comment on consent agenda item 11.
Okay. And Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll ask Public Works to... answer a couple questions about item 21.
Okay, very good. All right, let's start with the comments on item 5. Supervisor Moreno?
Yes, just a sentence I would like to offer that we add in, because one of the discussions that we had and that the public was very concerned about is there was no public process through this fire, the fire severity hazard zones, and what the letter we're sending to the state fire marshal. At the end of paragraph 2, I would like to add the following sentence. Equally concerning is the fact that no opportunity was provided for public input throughout this process, limiting local engagement and transparency. And so if you're all okay with that, I have passed that through County Council and the CAO, and our clerk, board clerk, has that if we have.
Yep. It looks like all members are approving that additional statement. Is that correct, Supervisor Pichon? You too? Yep, that's all. Okay, so that's good. All right, item 5 is taken care of, adding a sentence into the letter to the California State Fire Marshal regarding the fire hazard severity zone mapping in local responsibility areas. Very good. Item number 11 is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess only one person spoke today on this item. This is the weed abatement ordinance. Just wanted to let folks know that today, obviously, it's the consent agenda item. It is a consent agenda item because we're just introducing the ordinance. It is scheduled to come back to our board for public hearing on August 19th. So I would encourage those watching from home that have comments to attend that meeting and share your comments of that. Thank you.
Very good. Any other comments on item?
I will.
Go ahead.
No, very pleased that this is coming forward. When back in February, met with several, Captain McLean over there several others about the weed abatement ordinance, and so glad to see this coming forward and looking forward to the public process. We do want to hear from you, as Supervisor Pauline said. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll just add too that for quite a while we've not been able to tell people to cut their weeds because we didn't have this abatement ordinance in certain parts of the unincorporated area. And so for those that are interfacing with cities, that was really a challenge for some of the city residents, not being able to tell the county residents to take precautions regarding weeds and other things that had gotten out of control. So this will be helpful. Okay, item 14 is... your comment. Yes.
So this is, Mr. Kirkland spoke about this earlier, so thank you, Mr. Kirkland, for being here, but I disagree with you 100%. This is a great program. My kids have been through this program, as have thousands of other kids in this county have been through, and it's an exceptional program that will stop drinking in high schools, cannabis use in high schools, and get people to understand the severity of those. So appreciate you being here, but... not this time, Gary.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Agreed. And that program, seen a lot of kids benefit from that. Okay. Item 32.
These kind of 32 and 33 go together because it's that increase of the 375. And I just want to confirm with Director Drew's... that because it's not noted here on the consent, just a... you know, kind of the report out here that we have, that the 375 is being picked up by the hospitals, if we could get that confirmation.
Drews again. Yes. Simple answer is yes. This is being reimbursed by the hospitals directly.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Very good. So then I think that takes care of all of our comments. I'm looking for a motion regarding items...
If I might, Madam Chair, if
oh,
I
yes,
could
that's
ask
right.
Public,
21, sorry.
Yeah, no worries. If I could ask Public Works to come and just explain why we are replacing this bridge, why the bridge is the size that it is, and speak to mitigating the impacts that the public commenter has raised here.
Good morning. I'm John Waddell with Public Works. The commenter spoke to the need for the bridge, the urban style, freeway style of the bridge, and not considering impacts to residents. So as far as the need, the replacement now is necessary. It's a 75-year-old one-lane bridge with poor condition wooden deck and corroded steel supports. It's one lane, so new bridge is needed to remove our maintenance liability. This project is 100% federally funded. All eligible costs are funded by the feds without a local match. So this is our opportunity to complete this $6 million project. The existing bridge is 12 feet wide, and this new bridge, minimum allowed under the standards, it's 20 feet wide. So an additional 8 feet, that's kind of less than the distance from me to you. It is wider. It'll allow two 10-foot lanes, which are minimal widths for roadways. And it will be concrete, not susceptible to burning up in a fire. It's a key access to a large amount of federal lands, national forest lands, and one of the only accesses in the area for firefighting. As far as impacts to, and construction impacts, it's estimated in the negative declaration about 175 truck trips total planned over a 6-month period. That's at less than an average of one a day. Most of those will occur during the three major concrete pours, which will take place over 1 or 2 days each, so they'll be focused on those 3 days. The heavy equipment is likely to be moved in, being in the job, left there on the site. It's a remote site, so getting that in there. And then for most days, it'll be the crews and their vehicles coming and going.
If I could jump in, John, at this point. We've had this conversation in various rural areas in the 2nd District before as to the size of this bridge. It seems odd that deep into a relatively lightly traveled county road that we need a 2-lane concrete bridge. But as I understand it, there is not a federal standard for a 1-lane bridge. Is that still the case?
That's correct. There is not a federal standard for a 1-lane bridge. This is the minimum size allowed.
We're building it to the minimum
federal bridge allowed program. Okay. And at 20 feet wide, it is still a relatively narrow bridge. It is designed for a 25 mile per hour design speed.
And capable of handling heavy equipment if we needed to mobilize in a fire situation.
It will have full capacity for any loads that come through for heavy equipment.
Thank you. Right, those answer my questions. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. And apologies again for passing through 21. That was an important one. And I really appreciate that we had a chance to hear from Public Works on that and address some of the issues that were raised. Okay, so do we have a motion to approve?
I'll move approval of consent items 1, 2, and 4 through 33 with the change to 5, as indicated.
Second.
Approved by Moreno, seconded by Paulding.
Supervisor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Supervisor Paulding?
Yes.
Supervisor Pashong?
Yes.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So
I'm going to move approval of item 3.
Okay. And public comment on this? Comments on this? Supervisor Pashong?
My position is the same as it was when it was passed before.
Okay. Thank you. I would like to just note that, you know, we talked about this prior to the legislation that passed in Washington, D.C. last week in regarding Medicaid, which we call Medi-Cal. And here locally, the impacts are yet to be known exactly, but we do know that over 1,873 local physician partners participate in Medi-Cal, that Medi-Cal is serving over 240,000 residents between Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County, and that of that, hospitals receive $688 million in funds, providers $348 million, and so there's many services and support that actually come off of the Medi-Cal issue, and I think that it's not just for income folks, it's also, there's a lot of support that comes from Medi-Cal into the overall hospital and medical profession. So we have to really think about this long and hard, how this is going to impact us. So even though our letter's going late, I think it's still very important to be addressing the fact that this is going to impact everyone's health care overall.
Madam Chair, if I can add on, while the letter is perhaps moot given the actions taken in Washington, D.C., I think it's fundamentally important that this board be on record opposing an atrocious attack on the health care of the most vulnerable citizens of not only the state but this entire nation. Just the sheer cruelty of what this legislation proposes to do is staggering. The estimates are perhaps 100,000 lives lost over the 10 years that the particular moves have been made. Folks who depend on Medicaid in California, Medi-Cal, to keep them in their homes, to keep services flowing to them, to keep transportation so they can get to their health care. It is absolutely the most misguided and inhumane action that I've seen the federal government take. So I think even as this action has been taken, I think having this board on record and continue to be engaged as we see the actual implementation of this atrocity is very important. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think that, you know, again, it's not just for the most vulnerable, but it actually has a major impact on our overall economy. Yeah. And that's, you know, our justice-involved individuals. When things can't be served there, what they do is that they impact our hospitals. And that impacts the average insured provider going in, waiting in the emergency room, et cetera. So there's multiple layers of impact here. And I just want to note that, you know, we have been part of a coalition sending letters and acting with many of our partners trying to encourage reconsideration of this move to save money here to be able to give tax deductions to folks who I don't really think need them. But beyond that, we'll just take a vote on this item.
Supervisor Paulding?
Yes.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Supervisor Pashong?
No.
Supervisor Moreno?
No, ma'am.
And Chairperson Ortiz-Lake?
Yes. All right. Okay, that finishes our consent agenda. We get to move to the more fun things right now, and that is item 27. We have a formal presentation with a resolution commending Ronald Blakely for 50 years of volunteer service with the County of San Luis Obispo. We'll let the room clear, and then we'll ask Supervisor Gibson to provide the resolution.
And if we might have Mr. Blakey come to the microphone, as long as I also see Sheriff Parkinson.
Yes. Coming.
It's my honor to read this resolution commending Ronald Blakey for 50 years of outstanding volunteer service with San Luis Obispo County. Whereas Ronald Blakey has served 50 years as a volunteer with the Aero Squadron for the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office. And whereas, born in 1936 in Durham, England, Ronald began his love of flying from a young age and was able to experience the inaugural flight from Heathrow to JFK in 1946, being the first family to fly together after World War II. And whereas, after emigrating to the Central Coast in 1957, Ronald met his wife Sylvia and welcomed a son and a daughter. Sylvia also shares the love of flying with Ronald, as she was an active volunteer in the Sheriff's Aero Squadron during the 1980s for many airborne search missions. And whereas, in 1972, Ronald earned his FAA Private Pilot Certificate, and within a few years had refounded the Aero Squadron after its hiatus after World War II. Ronald and many other pilots had helped to bring this volunteer division together, knowing that this service was necessary for our community. And whereas Ronald served in the Aero Squadron as the Aero Squadron commander for several terms and served as incident commander for numerous airborne search and rescue operations. Most notably, in December 1987, he participated in the PSA Flight 1771 crash recovery operation, along with other members of the Sheriff's Aero Squadron providing ground and air support. And whereas he has accumulated over 700 hours of flight time as a search pilot and airborne observer, which has been a true asset to the Sheriff's Department and a true testament to Ronald's dedication to serving his community. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, that Ronald Blakey is hereby commended for his outstanding 50 years of volunteer service to the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office, his dedication to the community, and the county's mission. Be it also resolved that his service has been integral for the support of the Sheriff's Office and recognize the impact he has made. Fantastic. Come. It's all part of the package to get a picture. Anyway, you
can let go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Bob.
Good to see you.
Sheriff Parkinson.
Good morning, board. Thank you for doing this. Ian Parkinson, Sheriff Coroner. I think everybody in this community should be in awe of what you just heard. It's hard to say anything more to top that. The fact is that 50 years of service to this community is just unheard of. Matter of fact, 50 years in law enforcement is unheard of, let alone volunteering for free. We also have other members here that have got into the 20, 30 range, and I think we even have 40 range of volunteers. You know, volunteering with us, we are the largest law enforcement agency in the county, but we also have the most volunteers through all of our different programs. All of them are equally important to the community. I was thinking about it, and I'm not going to say what my age was, but most of us were pretty young when Ronald became a volunteer. Some were not even born, probably. Talk about institutional knowledge. Ronald carries that, and that's beneficial in two ways. Number one, to the program. For all new people coming in, the amount of knowledge that he has of where this program was 50 years ago, the continued training that they go through, the successes, the errors, all those things, Ronald possesses. And we are eternally grateful for everything he has done and continues to do. I hope that we have you around for much longer. I'm not sure we're going to hit the 100-year mark, but we're pretty lucky to have you. So thank you for everything you've done for the community.
Thank you very much. I think as a member of the squadron, we've gone through considerable changes over the period of years. Excuse me. And many different sheriffs also. And we are at liberty, or whatever you want to call it, the option of the sheriff as to whether or not we even exist as a squadron. And this gentleman has done a fantastic job of supporting us, and we hope we do have done an equal job of supporting him. And thank you for everybody for showing up. Very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other public comment on this? Please come forward. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Ian Stanson. I'm the current captain, commander of the Sheriff's Air Squadron.
Is it?
Oh, there we go. It's on now.
Okay. Thank you.
want me to repeat that?
Yeah.
I'm Jens Hansen. I'm the current captain and commander of the Aero Squadron. I've been in the squadron since 1986. I've known Ron for several years before that. But I would like to very specifically thank the Board of Supervisors and also the sheriff for recognizing Ron. He's been quite an asset to the Aero Squadron over the years. He's always been there for us whenever there's been a need for someone to fly as an observer or support us in our ground operations. He's been there for us. So once again, thank you very much on behalf of the entire squadron. Incidentally, we have about 23 members, and they come from all different levels of professions and experiences. About 15 of us own our own aircraft, and we're also flying the sheriff's aircraft. Thank you very in part to the Board of Supervisors. It's a wonderful flying machine.
That's great.
So thank you again. And if any one of you ever want to go for a flight around the county, let us know.
Yeah.
We'd be glad to show you what your beautiful county looks like from the air. Thanks.
I bet. Thank you. Okay. Any other public comment at this time? All right. I'll bring it. Oh, please, sir. Come forward. Yes.
My name is John Milton. I'm with Search and Rescue. And what I wanted to say is thank you to the Aero Squadron. I have been in search and rescue for many, many years, and I cannot tell you how many times when we're out on a call out, the Aero Squadron has helped us just completely, and they're great to have a partner as far as search and rescue is concerned.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Thank you. Any other more interesting stories or statements? Oh. Okay, well, then I will bring it back to the Board of Supervisors and look for comments. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I think we could spend the morning probably telling good stories of flying over this beautiful county. And I would love that, but other business awaits us. Mr. Blakey, thank you for an extraordinary record of service. And Ronald and I were speaking briefly as you approached the dais about the technology, and over the 50 years that you've been involved, that the technology has evolved. You may have seen heading down the dais the official search and rescue map of the county of San Luis Obispo, neatly folded and pristine, unmarked, showing all the necessary frequencies and air spaces that need to be done. It's remarkable to think that that map now pops up on an iPad in our cockpits and with our position and the location of all the other air traffic in the area. But beyond seeing that, even more important than seeing that incredible arc of technology is your commitment to the mission, sir. And you and all the members of the Aero Squadron are to be greatly commended for the service that you provide as volunteers to this county. We thank you, sir, and look forward to many more years of good work here. Thank you.
Supervisor Pichon.
I just want to thank you for your 50 years of service. I've actually never met anybody who's volunteered for 50 years in San Luis Obispo County. So thank you for all you've done.
Supervisor Paulding.
Yeah, I want to echo those comments. Thank you so much, Ronald. This county cares very much about volunteering, and wow, you've set the standard for us. So thank you so much for your many years of service. Again.
That's right. Supervisor Moreno.
Yeah, and Mr. Blakey, ditto. It just, without volunteers, we can't do a lot of what we do. And so thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And enjoy whatever you do next.
Yeah, and I just want to say how impressive you are. I mean, what a statement of 50 years of volunteering and then this lovely family and working together. And we know, as we see every day, of the kinds of accidents and tragedies that happen, that where search and rescue has to go out, and that to have this partnership to the sheriff and everything, it's remarkable. And this is one of the reasons why I really love our resolution time, because we learn so much more about what makes this county tick. And it's people like you, Ronald, and all your associates. And so thank you very much for being here today. And we're happy that you came. Thanks. Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on now to our board items. And again, we'll thank everybody for attending this morning for this special time and recognition. And I'm going to open consent agenda for items not on the agenda. And we have no...
It's not possible.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't have
public comment.
Public comment, excuse me. That's what I said, it's a say. Yeah, I'm thinking, folks. Yeah, public comment for items not on the agenda. Seeing no slips coming in, we will close public comment for items on the agenda, and we will ask the clerk to introduce the next item, please.
Continued hearing from August 29th to consider three appeals of the Planning Department Hearing Officer's approval of a request by Uriah Donaldson for a minor use permit, coastal development permit, to allow for the construction of a two-story, approximately 4,210 square foot mixed-use project located on South Ocean Avenue in the community of Cayucas.
All right. Okay. Well, are we ready to go, team? Okay, please, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Mark LaRue, Planning and Building. Presenting today for planning is project planner Andy Knighton with support from Supervisor Nicole Ellis.
Great.
1 second, I have no control, so they're gonna have to put up the PowerPoint in the back.
Okay. We're moving so fast that everybody's ready to catch up yet.
Ex parte?
Or? Yeah, we could do ex parte. Supervisor Moreno, any ex parte to report?
Not this time around, just the conversations I had prior to the initial appeal.
Okay, Supervisor Prashong?
No, ma'am.
Supervisor Paulding?
Same as Supervisor Moreno.
Okay, Supervisor Gibson?
Nothing beyond emails that are already in the record.
Very good, and same for me. No direct ex parte. Thank you. For the reminder. Okay. We're not ready yet? Are we ready yet? Okay, good.
All right, thank you. Good morning, Chairperson Ortiz-Legg and members of the board.
Yeah.
My name is Andy Knighton, planner with the county, and the item before the board is a continued hearing to reconsider the appeals by Harley Dubois, Ann Sturges, and Vicky Tumush of a request by Uriah Donaldson for a minor use permit and coastal development permit.
Okay.
At the April 29th, 2025 hearing, the board directed the applicant to provide two additional parking spaces to reduce the intensity and size of the project, and encouraged the applicant to consider additional architectural relief. The board was generally supportive of the compact parking spaces, while the appellant party preferred all parking spaces to be standard size. Based on the board direction, the applicant has made the following changes: reduced the floor area of the project from 4,910 square feet to 4,210 square feet, changed one commercial lodging unit into a common room and open deck, and the caretaker unit to a residential unit. The project now consists of one residential unit, two commercial lodging units, and one common room. The four compact parking spaces have been revised to be full size, 9 feet by 18 feet parking spaces, and there will now be seven full size parking spaces for the motel. The 5 foot wide landscape buffer will be reduced to 2 feet 8 inches to allow space for the full size parking spaces. Here is the vicinity and aerial maps. The site is located on South Ocean Avenue in the community of Cayucas. This table shows the differences between the original and the revised proposal. The purple oval on the revised site plan shows the full-size parking spaces and reduced landscape buffer. The red oval on the second-story floor plan shows the change from the caretaker unit to a residential unit. The green oval on the second-story floor plan shows the new common area and open deck that will replace the commercial lodging unit. And the yellow oval on this front rendering shows what the front of the building will look like as viewed from South Ocean Avenue with the common area and deck in place of the commercial lodging unit. In summary, the project as conditioned is consistent with the county general plan, Estero area plan standards, local coastal plan, and coastal land use ordinance, and makes the required findings. The applicant has shared the revised design with the appellants, and the county has shared revised plans with the CCAC president and land use committee chair. All appeal items and direction from the board has been addressed. That concludes staff's presentation. The applicant, Uriah Donaldson, and his architect, we recommend that the board find the revised project is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act and to adopt the resolution to partially uphold and partially deny the appeals and approve the revised minor use permit and coastal development permit, subject to the revised findings and revised conditions of approval. That concludes staff's presentation. The applicant, Uriah Donaldson, is architect. Members of the appellant party and county staff are present for the appeal hearing and are available to respond to any questions the board may have. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Board, do you have questions? Supervisor Gibson? No? Okay. Any other questions? No questions. Okay, so we're going to open public comment, and it is the chair's discretion whether to allow additional time for the appellant or the applicant to speak. So I'm happy to do that within a reasonable amount of time. So I don't know if the applicant has any input or comments, or you want to listen to everybody and then you can respond or something. I think we'll do that. So I'm opening public comment, and I'm going to start with Dan Boradori, please, followed by Vicky Tamosh.
Can you put up the PowerPoint in the back, please?
Okay. Okay. Is this it? Oh, okay. Is that it up there now?
No.
Oh, that's you. Oh, isn't this the PowerPoint? Okay. We see it on the screen, right? Okay. Okay.
Parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
This full size step.
Yep.
This is the latest rendering I have. When I was here before, I showed what would happen if we had several full size vehicles come in.
Right.
Okay. This is a publication by the California New Car Dealers Association showing the makeup of vehicles sold in the United States and California in the years 2023 and 2024. If you notice, 72.4%, I think it is, 72.7% of the vehicles sold in California were light-duty trucks. Only 8% were compact. So as we're putting in compact parking places, there's no vehicles for compact. Everything's going bigger. The bulk of the rest of the vehicles sold were SUVs. And what was really surprising to me is in the United States, light-duty trucks were 81.2% of the vehicles sold, the new vehicles. Okay, this is his proposed new way of putting it in to reduce our mass and to do articulation. I did some moving things around. I did a mirror and moved the smaller one to the outside and put the larger unit up against the building that's right behind it, and then went as far as to flip the three-bedroom one up against the building and put the smaller side out to the front, to the public side, to give a little more articulation and reduce the mass. If you look at the way it's proposed right now, you can see how it would sit on the lot and how it would be viewed by the public. If you flip this around, now you can see how much more articulation we get and how much mass reduction you get from the street by doing it this way. I know there's a concern for water runoff and stuff. In 2004, the county did an extensive drainage report for Cayucas, and nothing has ever been done on this report. but maybe we should look at, because this agency does not have any money, maybe we should look at start putting in a capacitance fee for new construction, that the money would be put into a fund to upgrade our wastewater system. And as builders build, they're charged for how much water they're going to disperse into the streets and create flooding. And this way it'll help alleviate getting projects done to get waste or storm runoff water taken care of so we don't flood places. Thank you.
Vicky Tamush, followed by Jan Meslin.
My name is Vicky Tamush, and I'm one of 23 appellants in this case. Our family's property is directly behind the proposed Donaldson project. I invited each of you to come see the property because everyone, including the applicant, has expressed that they fully understood the appellant's position only after visiting the property in person. I'm grateful to Supervisor Gibson for accepting that invitation. There are two main points on which we disagree with the applicant's proposal. The building is massive and its appearance does not fit the character of downtown Cayucas. Insufficient parking spaces absolutely will cause problems for all the neighboring properties, including our local businesses whose customers can't find parking even now. While Mr. Donaldson has removed one of the upstairs housing units, he has replaced it with a game room that could sleep twice as many people as the previously planned housing unit. It's not clear whether this game room will also be available for use by the public. The open nature of the new game room with vending machines and a restroom will quickly fill with sleeping bags and airbeds. And of course, those individuals will have arrived in Cayucas in a vehicle that will be parked on neighboring streets. We appellants feel like we are constantly asking the board to please, please plan for success rather than failure when it comes to these parking issues. We realize that by approving as many developments as possible, the county could potentially increase its income through the hotel tax. But what good will that do if, by granting parking waivers to every developer, our towns are no longer desirable destinations? We've encountered one obstacle after another throughout this process, the most recent example of which is the staff report Mr. Knighton submitted that leads the reader to believe that we appellants and Mr. Donaldson came to an agreement. I had believed that the county would be honest with us and treat us with the same courtesies that we see are extended so readily to the developer. We can't expect developers to protect the unique character of towns like Cayucas, but we can expect our board to do so. I urge you to please support your constituents in Cayucas and require this development and all others to provide sufficient on-site parking. Thank you.
Thank you. Jan Meslin, followed by Harley Dubois.
Hello, I'm Jan Meslin. I live in Cayucas. I come as a member of the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council. And my husband and I moved to Cayucas almost 7 years ago, retired from Orange County, and we love living there. Soon after I moved there, I realized that I wanted to keep it like that as much as I could. And I found out there was an advisory council, and it's not easy to always find that out, of course, but I did, and there was an opening on my precinct, so I joined. And I want to thank Bruce Gibson for all of your service to us and really helping Cayucas stay as much as we can like it is. And he started on the advisory council, as a lot of you know. But we're going to miss you when you leave next year. So things come to our council every month. I mean, lots of things go to the Land Use Committee, of course, and I still have a lot to learn about it, but things that have any variances or anything that's unusual. And our Land Use Committee spends a lot of time. We don't approve everything. In fact, I think, I mean, my guess is about 50-50 these days. We approve some, we don't. So we did disapprove the Donaldson project. I live about three blocks up the street, by the way, about three blocks from this project. We disapproved it, and when we did, it had seven full parking spaces. And there were some changes along the way. We don't always get notified when there are changes, which is one thing that is kind of frustrating to me. Other projects, too. Things happen, and we don't even get notified. And then we come here and learn all these things that have happened. And so what I want to do is just get more transparency and that you listen to our councils, not only ours, but all the advisory councils, because we're the ones that live there and have the most interest in it. What else? Our school population is decreasing right now, and this is for a lot of reasons, partly because of the vacation rentals. It's an issue a lot of places, and that's a whole other issue, but we're just trying to keep Cayucas nice as it is, and for anyone else that comes to, it's a great place to visit. So listen to the advisory councils. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Dubois? Oh, Ms. Dubois.
I get that a lot. Thank you all for having me here today. My house is next to Vicky's, and so I'm basically right behind the property. I have no parking. I use street parking already. I have an elderly mother who's 94 and will probably be around until she's 100 or some odd. And we are already having a parking issue, so I don't know what we're going to do. If, in fact, there are more than seven cars parked in there, it will come directly to my house. And I think I'm the only person in the block who doesn't have parking. and there really are 23 of us appellants. It's not three. That's just how many fit on the sheet. But there's 20 other people who are with us. And I think it'd be more if more people knew about it, because this is a common problem for everybody. Parking, parking, parking. And the game room seems like it's going to make things better because there's less beds. But actually, if that's something that's open to the public or it's a place for children to come and play, they're going to have their parents drive them there. There's going to be more cars. There's going to be more parking issues with the game room. From my observation, actually living in Cayucas and seeing the way these kind of rental units get used, they really do attract people and cars. And then lastly, we've been working really in good faith with Donaldson, and I don't feel like we've gotten the same courtesy back because of the changes that have happened that we don't know about until we come here. So I really do appreciate you giving us this time today to talk and to tell you, to express what it's really like for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dubois. Okay, and then Mr. Carcel. And that is the last speaker slip I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is John Carcel, and I am not any longer a member of the Advisory Council. I say that as I'm retired. This is a better project than it was 2 months ago, much better. They took away two units, two of the rooms, so there are four rooms, four sleeping rooms being rented, and then the three-bedroom residential unit, which now we're calling a residential unit, and we're being honest and not calling it a caretaker unit, which was being dishonest to try to meet parking standards. This is good. The problem is what's called a common area is not just a common area. It also includes a bathroom, and it includes a golf simulator room or a game room, as we're calling it. The problem I have with the bathroom, and I wrote you all a long email. I hope it wasn't too long. You didn't read it. But an email yesterday detailing some of my concerns with this, that it basically says you have a small building with everybody's got multiple bathrooms in these units. These units are two bedrooms for the rentals and three bedrooms for the home. The two-bedroom ones have modified kitchens, but they have refrigerators. They have refreshments there. You don't need vending machines there. You don't need a bathroom. To put a bathroom there is saying he's going to bring the youth group or a bunch of teenagers, and they can camp out and sleep there. We just had our July 4th parade. I hope some of you managed to see it. It was wonderful, but the town was full. How many people are going to be in that recreational room. It's a covered enclosure of 700 square feet. It's not a little bitty room. You know, you have, these are supposed to be extended stay places, the two units. And which brings me to another issue I have, and I've had, and I think we've talked to planning about it. I don't know what the standard is, what the status is. The county defines motels as needing one parking space per unit. That's it. Other communities define parking for motels as one parking space per sleeping room. That's the problem we had initially, where you had to go to a slight fiction and trying to get proper parking for this place. The county needs to revise its ordinance to say it's a sleeping room and not a unit. A unit can have 14 sleeping rooms, okay, with one parking space. This is the forerunner of the model we're going to see in Cayucas. There are already others coming up the pipeline. And we need to get proper definitions in there before we're taken advantage of. I understand parking is not a major issue for some of you. It depends on where we all live. But in Cayucas, it's disastrous. And it's contrary to the Coastal Act, which says we're trying to get people to get to the coast. There has to be parking for the people coming from the valley to park. So I put conditions in. If you're not going to open it to the public, there have to be conditions. And in my email, I sent in some proposed conditions. They're not well worded, but that's not my job. But they're there. And you can't just say it's not open to the public and not have a condition in there that says it's not open to the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Rachel Wilson.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Wilson. I am on the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council, and I'm also on the Land Use Committee, but I am not here to speak on their behalf today. I spoke on April 29th against this project because it did not have enough parking. And I was really surprised at the end of speaking, Uriah Donaldson came up and said, "Hey, Rachel, would you mind if I call you and we can talk?" And I said, "Sure." And then I was really surprised on... Oh, and one of the things that was really interesting to me is when I spoke on April 29th, he could have thrown me under the bus because I had said that you said at a meeting that you were going to have a residential unit, that it was not going to be a caretaker's unit. And he stood up here and very honestly said, yes, it is going to be my residence. But anyway, so on May 2nd, happy Friday. This is Uriah Donaldson. Would you have a few minutes to chat sometime today or Monday? Yes, I'm in a meeting right now. I will text you when I am done. He sent me his plans. And I contacted Dan Boradore. I contacted two of the appellants and said, "Hey, what do you think of these plans?" And Dan immediately said, "You know, he's going to make a game room at the bottom floor," because the original idea was the game room was going to be at the bottom. And both of us were thinking, hey, that could be converted into a full unit by someone else later even, not even a Uriah. And so talked to him and said, "Hey, Uriah," the same day, May 2nd, "Hey, what do you think about moving it upstairs? Man, maybe cutting it back a little bit, having a full deck there. You'll be the premier place for fireworks." And guess what? He goes, "I like the idea." Wow. He has just agreed to get rid of 33% of his income by getting rid of one of the units, and we're talking on May 2nd. And so anyway, later he said, "You know, Rachel, I went to a motel. I really do like having the idea of a game room where people can meet together." And I'm thinking, you know, with my grandkids on a cruise ship, game rooms are great. Yes, these units may have kitchen, but when I gave up being married, I gave up cooking for the most part. And when I go on vacation, I really don't want to cook. Plus, it's really a nice place to go send kids to get stuff at vending machines, et cetera. So I checked the motels in Cayucas. Quite a few of them have vending machines. Quite a few of them have community rooms where people can go up and share. And so... anyway, what I would really like to encourage, though, and the whole reason I came to speak is, this is the first time I've ever known where a developer in their replanning stage has come to talk to the community. They haven't just been talking to the county. And I would really like to encourage this continuation of talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Okay, Mr. Dawson. And then if you wouldn't mind filling out a slip later. Thanks.
Actually, first off, good morning. I'm Tom Jess with Aero Studio Architects. I'm actually the architect.
That's right. I didn't think you looked like him.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We're very similar in appearance. So just to be real brief, the applicant has worked and met with everybody. He's been very flexible in terms of accommodations, making changes to the building as being requested. As was mentioned, we went from 3 guest rooms to 2 guest rooms. The game room moving upstairs also required, I mean, it did make the deck larger, which is a benefit. It reduced the massing along the main street there, pulled everything back. It also reduced the requirement for parking, but it also required us to put in an accessible chairlift now because we have an amenity on the second floor that the guests can use, so we have to provide accessibility to it. So he's gone ahead and provided accessibility to the second floor, which wasn't required before. I understand the sensitivity to parking, but what we have is we have a parking space for each guest room. We have 3 parking spaces for the residents, which if it was a single family house would only require 2. And then we have 2 additional parking spaces there for overflow parking, for potential for cleaners, if they're coming in, they'll have a spot to, you know, like there's a lot of parking on this for what's being proposed. And the attempts to redesign it and flip the building and so forth, I can understand the desire to look at something like that, but the building code requires that we have egress from these units, and so the fire department can service them. Putting the units right up against the adjacent building like that would negate that. It's not code. We can't really do that. So long story short, the game room is not open to the public. It's a residence and guests amenity. It's not going to increase the number of parking spaces required. It's Uriah is a big golfer, so he thought other people liked golfing, so he wanted to put in a golf simulator and a pool table. That's really what's being proposed up there. The full-size parking spaces was an accommodation because that was a request that was made to make them full-size. That's fine. We were able to accommodate that. And long story short, I'm happy to answer any questions. We feel like we've done significant modifications to the building in response to the appellants, to the feedback that we received from the board at the last hearing, and we're hopeful that you can find a way to approve it and allow us to move forward with this. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, Madam Chair, if I might, Mr. Yes. Just on the matter of this common area room, let's call that on the on the second floor, what I heard you say is that that's added to the development for the use of the motel guests and the residents of the residential unit only. Is that correct?
Correct.
It's not open for separate rental to the general public. It's not available to be used as additional sleeping quarters. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Jess. Okay. Any further public comment? All right, closing public comment and bringing it back to the Board of Supervisors.
Madam Chair, I think Please. We can move forward on this. First of all, again, thank my friends and neighbors in the community of Cayucas, the members of the Advisory Council, and others who have been engaged in this. It is a long tradition of active public engagement in our small town. And to Ms. Wilson, I will say this, in fact, is a continuation of a long history stretching back nearly 30 years of certain individuals who want to propose development in Cayucas to actually very actively engage the community. And I think what we've got here is a project that can be approved. I think there are just a couple tweaks we might need to make to seal it down. Directing my questions to staff, let me, one of the issues that's been raised in this appeal over time is that of runoff and the stormwater system. It's my understanding that any new development based on the permitting at the state and federal level that we're required to comply with cannot exacerbate any problem in the public aspects of the stormwater drainage system. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. They were going to provide drainage plans that would be reviewed and certified by Public Works at time of building permits.
And that those drainage plans are held against that standard of not creating more problems. So if there is a deficiency in the public
drainage system within Cayucas. That's an existing deficiency that is not on them to correct. And I will certainly have conversations with Public Works as to whether there's a there's another one. As to the redesign of this building, I understand the topic of the size and the use and the impacts of the buildings have been a hot topic in Cayucas for decades. And parking is certainly among it. The massing of the building is among it. At the same time, the consideration of this board, I think, has to be for fairness in terms of its this proposal's adherence to the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance and the Estero Area Plan. And I think, again, I'm going to propose that we have a couple of just a minor modification to the conditions of approval that will memorialize what we heard from the applicant's agent here. But in looking at the changes that are made, I think it is significant that one of the motel units has been reduced. I think that has allowed, with the common area room going on the second floor, an articulation of the building that does reduce its mass to the street. I don't think, I appreciate Mr. Borodori's detailed analysis of which side that should be on, but again, there's a vacant lot there that will eventually, I think, get developed. So if it is the applicant's desire to have that room on the common area room on the southern side, I don't think that makes a huge difference as to the a matter of the appeal, issue on the massing of the building. Look at the parking that's in the revised project. It's good that it's 7 full-size spaces. If you look at that, that is 2 for each of the motel units, 2 for the residents, as it should be, plus 1. My understanding is that one of the 7 is an ADA accessible space, and one of them will have an electric charger. So I think on the whole, the parking has been properly accounted for and is now sized for the development that's being proposed. So it meets basically the development the parking requirements of something that's different from a normal motel room. I agree with Mr. Carcel that a more precise definition of what constitutes a motel room in this age of VRBO and vacation rentals would be a useful exercise at some point when the board has a few minutes of spare time. So the only thing that I would suggest, and then I'm prepared to move essentially staff's recommendation on what we see here, is in the conditions of approval. That's on in our consolidated agendas. That's on page 610 of 629. It's exhibit B of the revised resolution that would dispatch the action on this. The first section of conditions of approval is approved development. And what I don't see in there is the approval of development of the common area room. So what I would suggest is under approved development subsection A, it reads now a 2-unit motel totaling 3,012 square feet of commercial floor area, comma, and I would add then including a common area room for the sole use of motel guests and occupants of the residential unit, period. That common area room not to be used for sleeping or rented separately for public access. I can give staff and council a minute to wordsmith that. But I think with that, that addresses the issues that Mr. Carcel raised and the community raised. This is clearly a common area room that is typical of many hotels. It would be a premier spot to view the 4th of July parade and the fireworks, no doubt, for those that are lucky enough to occupy that building. So when staff might be able to show us their revised language there, I think I'm ready to proceed with a motion.
Madam Chair.
if I may.
Yeah, Supervisor Moreno.
My only concern with that revision is that if there are, you know, people who are staying there or renting places and they have family or friends in the area, that somehow that language would preclude them from bringing, you know, family and friends, hey, come to the common area and we're going to do the golf or shoot pool. I don't think we should, you know, and then you've got neighbors looking and saying, oh, somebody came over to visit, and it kind of creates a little bit of an environment. I agree, you know, certainly not a sleeping room or you know, for rent for parties or something like that, but I don't think we should prohibit, you know, friends or family from coming over.
Sure, and Supervisor Moreno, maybe we could get Mr. LaRue to just weigh in informally on an interpretation that use that is part of a tenancy in the motel units, whether they be folks from offsite or not, I don't think would raise code enforcement issues.
Yeah, I think staff has a comment on that.
Yeah, we feel pretty comfortable with that being it. Motel guests would include their guests if they had, you know, a friend.
Visitors, yeah.
Visitors, yep.
Okay. I just want to make sure that's in the record, because if anybody ever asks, then yes, yeah. We know how that can go.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. So do we have language to view?
Yeah, we do. So we added it as a sub item to
let's see
A.
If we can, oh, yeah. Can we get it in front of the, yeah. The, so we have to turn around.
Oh, it's up there.
Residential unit.
Yeah, on our screen.
Our screen.
Yeah, they're going to try that. He went in to try.
Okay. That on the big screen, it looks right to me. Oh, there it is.
I mean, if you do read that specifically, if you take that,
yeah,
if you take that verbatim, you cannot bring a guest or if you know, family or anyone over.
Use
so
a motel guest. I think that'll do it. All right. With that, I'll move staff's recommendation, partly upholding, partly denying the appeal, with the revised resolution findings and conditions of approval as modified just now.
Second.
Under discussion, just want to thank the applicant and the appellant for working together and modeling that that ability to, you know, no one's going to be happy or we're never going to get perfect, but I think we made a better project here collectively, and also appreciate the work of staff as well. So thank you. Yeah. I'll be supporting this item if you're here.
And do you have a comment?
I do.
Yep, please.
I'd like to thank also the applicant for working with the community and working with people and listening to this board. So thank you.
Yep. Please extend our thanks to the applicant for his flexibility and listening to the neighbors. And also I'd like to thank the neighbors for getting engaged and knowing that, you know, we do listen and we do want to try to get to the point where we can, you know, find a balance of sort in an area that is known for its commercial ocean activity, recreational activity. It's one of the challenges that we have living in a beautiful place. And I also want to thank staff, and I know the intentions of staff are really trying to always collaborate with both sides of an equation. So, you know, might have been a little misstep there, but not intentional, I don't believe. It was out of just not understanding completely. So with that, sure. Go ahead, Supervisor Moreno.
Yeah, no, I echo the words of my colleagues. And also, you know, Mr. Carcel brought up the point, and this is the conversation we had a few months ago, was that room versus unit, and that's one of the reasons I supported making these changes and bringing this back. So it is something I think we're going to need to have a conversation about and look at, you know, future projects, whether in Cayucas or elsewhere, and how we're looking at, because it just the landscape has changed with vacation rentals, and we need to make sure that our code keeps up with that so that we don't have these kind of problems that delay any sort of developments and create the problems that they have in the past.
Fully in agreement with that. And perhaps we make a time for us to discuss prior to with our land use time sometime to be able to. And I think it could come from a motion in the after
after we finish regular business. Okay, seeing no further comments, let's take a vote, please.
Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Chairperson Ortiz-Legge?
Yes.
Supervisor Pichon?
Yes.
Supervisor Paulding?
Yes.
And Supervisor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. All right, now we are going to go into closed session, and I would like the council to report on how long we should be in closed session, please.
So don't forget to take public comment. We're going to be on closed session on items 3, 9, 11, and 12. I anticipate about 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to open public comment for closed session and see if there's any public comment on closed session. And seeing there's no public comment on closed session, I'll be closing it. And we'll be back after closed session, okay, in about 11 o'clock or so. Okay? All right. Thank you. Okay, I'm live. All right, well, we have returned from closed session, and I would like to ask council to report out on our closed session, please.
Sure. So the board met in closed session and took no reportable action.
Thank you. All right, our last item is if there are any board member comments or reports. Seeing none, we're going to adjourn, and we will see you next Tuesday. Thank you.